This podcast is supported by Washington.org. Washington, D.C. offers visitors so much to explore. Just ask Dayo, who shared her experiences from a recent visit.
What was your favorite food all weekend?
The Ethiopian food at Sihei.
And the first place you would visit again?
The bookstore, Little District Books.
What did you appreciate the most?
Really just like the genuine kindness of everyone that I encountered this weekend.
Why should people visit D.C.?
Well, D.C. is a place with such a thriving culture.
Washington, D.C. has something for everybody. Plan your next trip at Washington.org.
Welcome to Podcast Deluxe, your Prove It of Weekly Cultural Review. I'm John Caramonica, critic of the New York Times.
I'm Joe Coscarelli, reporter at the New York Times.
And Joe, we both had a long weekend.
Yep.
But part of that long weekend involved sitting in a movie theater and taking in Taylor Swift's Eras Tour movie.
This has been the most extraordinary experience of my entire life. To go on a little adventure together, and that adventure is going to span 17 years of music. How does that sound?
You were sitting?
Oh! So, we had different experiences because I have seen Eras Tour.
Yes.
IRL.
Yeah.
You have not.
I think this is crucial, yeah.
So I'm curious to know your experience of, we can get into the sort of quality of the film in a minute, but I wonder what your thoughts are on just Eras Tour.
Yeah.
Having not encountered it one-on-one
before. I've had a busy year. I missed the Eras Tour.
Yeah.
At the moments when
you could have intersected.
I could have intersected with it, and I have not been able to see it, though. Yep. I hope that I will on the second leg.
Yep, sure.
I'd experienced it online, like a lot of people. Mm-hmm. I've seen clips. I've seen memes. I've seen moments. I've seen whole songs even. I watched most of the show.
Right.
The first time around when it existed on YouTube.
Yeah.
There was like the supercuts, the concert movie basically already existed in bootleg form.
Just like the kid who did the Frank Ocean Coachella movie. There's versions of this out there.
Yes. But I will say seeing the high quality Eras Tour film with RPX sound on a Saturday evening into Saturday night. This is 2 hours and 48 minutes of concert.
Saturday evening and Saturday night, fall into winter. It's just an incredibly long stretch of time. Yeah.
I had a great time.
Yeah.
I had a great time. I didn't know if it was going to drag. I didn't know if I was going to be able to stomach the visual language of the Eras Tour, which we should talk about. But what I found was that almost as always, as I find with Taylor Swift, the songs are just good enough to withstand whatever BS swirl around them.
So many good songs.
Just even the bad songs are good.
That's not true. But
you and I disagree a lot about what the bad songs are.
Yeah.
But I just, I had a blast.
To pick up on that thread, I will say the songs that historically I have found challenging, the eras that I have found challenging, were only amplified by being trapped in a chair looking like this at a screen watching essentially Taylor Swift state media.
Oof.
Yeah, like that was tough. Like the Evermore era, this was incredibly challenging for me personally.
A, it was brief.
Sure.
B, it was spooky. Were you a little scared as of someone who, it's October, as somebody who doesn't watch horror films, did you find Willow to be a little bit scary?
No, I did not.
I thought it was legitimately spooky.
Genuinely?
Yeah.
Okay, well then.
And well performed.
I thought I enjoyed watching the performance of those songs more than I enjoyed watching the performance of them in real life. But part of the reason I enjoyed that is because during that segment specifically was maybe like the first moment of humanity. There's that thing where Taylor sits at the piano and starts fiddling with the moss on the piano as if she's
a classic Taylor moment. And then she does
I'm leaning.
And she's like, why am I doing
what am I doing? Like
she's being like us.
Yeah, like us before we start recording.
Yeah.
Like, are we doing this? Like, what are we saying? Leg crossed right to left, left to right. She's doing that. It's on stage. It's captured. They didn't cut it out.
Yep.
That moment, I really, really enjoyed. Those songs,
You're including Folklore in this?
Folklore's a little bit better.
Come on, Betty was a highlight.
Betty was great. No. Betty was great. Legitimately great. No, Evermore, though, and especially the fact that Evermore is immediately followed by Reputation, which tells me they know perfectly well Evermore is not hitting.
You're talking about Evermore, but what the era that really got short shrift, Speak Now.
Oh, yeah. As if it never happened.
It might as well not exist.
Literally eradicated from the cultural memory, which is unfortunate. Good album.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, what? Okay, so this was my overarching feeling is that, and I sort of said this the first time we talked about the Eras Tour, I think there's a lot of recency bias in the set list.
Oh, of course, because they're touring albums that have not been toured.
Yes, which she talks about a little bit in the film. Mm-hmm. But that means that the progress, the arc of the special, of the concert, is wrong. Like, ending with that many Midnight songs instead of a greatest hits medley.
Of course.
Or doing two Midnight songs into Antihero with that as the, like, Karma as a grand finale.
Yeah, but you're skipping ahead.
It's just like,
totally agree.
It just doesn't work. Like, so much of the emotional catharsis is over by the halfway or two thirds point of the film. And then everything. And then from there, it's sort of like anticlimax.
Yeah, with the Midnight songs, like, you get to Antihero, and like, I don't love Antihero, but at that moment,
it's a banger.
So at that moment, you're like, it's done. And I remember feeling the same thing in the room or in the stadium or whatever, like, as it was happening, like, we're doing it.
It's a beat traffic. It's a beat traffic portion of the show.
Like, it really does.
If I was at MetLife,
yes,
but I would have been on my way to my car.
Name one of the 50,000 people in that stadium who was like, I'm ready to go. Like, everybody was like sticking around to the bitter end.
I can name one, but I won't for her health and safety.
That is true. We protect our friends. Midnight's, if anything, this film underscored that Midnight's is not hitting. Like, broadly speaking, because by the time, like, look, you want to get me in a stadium for 3 hours, fanfare, touching the energy of the people around, like, feeling all of that. Okay, I'll grant you a little Bejeweled at hour three. Mm-hmm. But in a cinema, sitting at Alamo Drafthouse,
where I went to, let's talk a little bit about.
I went to Alamo Drafthouse, where you cannot be on your phone, which is why I took notes on the order cards.
Did you order food?
I did not order food. I forgot about this, which is heretical for me.
Yeah, I mean,
I have to go back probably just to get these.
I did the combo meal. You could go see another movie and just order these.
Can you do that?
They're at the regular concession stand. Okay, we've seen the videos going viral this weekend of
people dancing at the
of people doing, you know, seance.
Yeah.
Of people losing their minds.
Did that happen at your screening?
No. My screening was a little more grown up. I don't know if that was location. I saw it downtown Manhattan.
And also what
6 p.m.
time?
6 p.m. showing.
Okay.
On a Saturday.
Okay, so I saw the 2 p.m. on Saturday. I would say mine was like one third to one half kids,
okay,
or kids and parents.
Okay.
And it also wasn't totally uproarious in the way that some of those videos are, but I'd say about halfway through, whoever the kids were in like the front two rows were finally like, it's go time.
Mask off.
Yeah. And absolutely just in the kind of like space between the screen and the front row, just like the whole
dancing and singing.
Dancing, okay. Singing, shouting.
I could have done with a little more of that. Did it bother you or did it make your experience?
No, I actually was kind of like, I was low-key disappointed that there wasn't more of it.
Yeah.
Also, like, this, respectfully, is not a film I need to pay close attention to.
Right.
I would much rather be immersed in an experience than feel like I have to pay close attention. Especially because the closer attention I paid, the more I hated this movie. Like, this movie, I mean, Wesley, our colleague Wesley Morris, I thought put it very, very well, where he said the director is, I can't remember the guy's name, it is unclear if he has made a movie or a salad.
That was Wesley's line.
Yes. I honestly found this film visually painful to watch. It doesn't know if it wants to be a thoughtful portrait of a woman commanding a stadium or if it wants to be an absolute, like, the worst hyper MTV micro cut, close, far, middle, back, fan. It's from song to song, era to era, the pacing is different.
Yes.
The patience of the camera never kicks in until like after All Too Well, 10 minute version. You don't ever feel like you're really watching Taylor until the second half of the film. I have these moments very early in the film where all of a sudden it's like you're watching Taylor. It's like she's here. She's here. She's up there. She's down there. And then you're like lingering on a random fan for 5 seconds. And it's like nothing against that fan. But I'm like, are the fans characters? Because if they're characters, how are we going to weave them through? Or are we just using them to fill in the spots that we don't have the perfect Taylor shot?
I could have done with more fans.
That's what I'm saying. It has to be either less or more. Either ignore them or weave them into the narrative of the film.
I have a thing where mass spectacle and especially mass enjoyment triggers an immediate emotional reaction in me, like the Olympics, for instance, like a big crowd and their heart all pushing in one direction. Mm-hmm. Like that immediately gives me chills. That like makes me tear up. And so anytime there would be like a full crowd, like sheer scale of seeing 80 to 100,000 people all focusing their attention. And I thought they did a really good job underlining the moments where Taylor plays with that dynamic.
Yes.
Like the pointing that she does at the beginning when she really, you know, is showing how much power she has. Yes. When she says, when they give her a big standing ovation at one point in between songs, and she says like, I forget the exact term, but she says like, that's a really nice thing to do for someone, basically, you know, and like plays with the humility versus the like cult leader divide. Like I found all of those moments to be really touching and a really good summation of this phenomenon that is Taylor Swift in 2023. But you're right, it was intermittent and I never knew when we were going to feel those moments versus the quick cuts and the and it did feel like there was some, like I thought the movie did a pretty good job covering up the dancing that she got made fun of a lot during the tour. Right, like, because you never lingered on it too much. No. Like, instead of showcasing her dancing, it felt like it was obscuring her dancing.
And I will say, sometimes emphasizing the dancers, which is fine, but there's a reason that there are certain things in a stadium show that maybe are so detailed that you miss them. And when she was doing The Man, the facial expressions of the dancers that she's surrounded with, I thought were so intense that I found it hard to watch her because I'm just looking at the guy next to her and be like.
And the one guy does a little like, did you see that one? did I just embarrass you?
Unbelievable. The other thing is you're describing the successful parts of the film as essentially extra musical. It's Taylor interacting with the crowd. It's Taylor pointing at the section and roar and then doing an entire, she's doing a wave, like a sonic wave throughout the stadium. I didn't really start rooting for Taylor the singer until All Too Well. Like, and after that point, I feel like the whole thing slows down a little bit. You're sort of invited into a version of Taylor that is not on display in the first half. It's got nothing to do with her. Like in real life, that's not how I experienced the show. I didn't say the show woke up halfway through, but in this film, it's like there was some urgency to be like, how many different ways can we cut in? How much can we cram in? But I think it fundamentally took away from like, what are we watching? I'm watching one of the premier pop performers of the last 10 years at a highly orchestrated stadium show, control at a level that maybe only like 3 to 5 people can do currently working. That's not the movie. That's the movie that I would have liked to have seen. That is not the movie that this was.
I got that. I got the idea. As someone,
like if the movie is for 8-year-olds, then that's fine because I'm sure the 8-year-old sitting next to me wasn't sitting there being like, it's got the edits and the too fast. But for me, having seen the concert and also fundamentally being sympathetic to Taylor as a performer, I wanted a little bit more breathing space.
See, I felt like I understood her mastery of performance and of the stage. I thought musically, I mean, because it was so seamless, the rendition of the show, like because any sort of flub is covered up or edited around or cut entirely. Like, I do wonder the songs that were cut, were they cut because there was an off moment, or were they cut because she thinks they're the least crucial to the story she's telling? Mm-hmm. So I did feel like, even though it was so smooth in its delivery, I didn't doubt for a second that she was owning the performance, and I thought everything sounded great. Shout out to my guy with the John and Kate plus eight hair, the guitar player.
He's the band leader.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's
been around since the beginning.
I was going to say, you can see watching the movie, you're like, that guy's been around since the beginning. Yeah. Otherwise, he might be styled a little differently.
You mean the haircuts grandfathered in? To be honest, it's a lot more chill than it used to be. Like in like 2010 or whatever.
Yeah, we need the side by side.
Like, it was a wilding, real Rascal Flatts vibes.
Yeah. I liked seeing the band. I would have liked to see even more. But mostly, like, and this shows my bias as a Taylor fan. And like, okay, Reputation, good songs. Like, that was a nice little portion of the show.
Great songs.
But like, all of my favorite moments in the movie were her with an acoustic guitar or a piano. Like, those, like, Our Song, incredible.
Great. Our Song was great.
I'm just, like, blown away every time that, like, a teenager
could
wrote
do that.
Yep. You know? Mm-hmm. All Too Well.
Oh, fascinating.
Really, really great. I just refuse to buy that the 10-minute version is the canonical version. It's just still not there for me.
I got chills.
At the extended verses?
I got chills. I'm not even gonna lie. I got chills. And I really, I understand, but like, to me, the extended version, here's the thing. It doesn't diminish the song. And in places, it strengthens it. Are there more like lully moments? There's probably more lully moments, like percent to total. But if anything, I think it thickens and deepens the song. And I really, maybe after 90 minutes.
The outro.
Maybe after 90 minutes of like seizure editing, I was ready to just have someone like hold a camera on someone and like look at a thing without being told, like, stop looking at that thing. You can't, not allowed to look at it that much. But genuinely chills. And I really also felt like, look, Taylor is like 10 to 20 to 30% like Broadway theatrical and sure. performing.
Yeah.
Maybe more sometimes. Yeah. But like, let's generous.
This tour,
it's at an
all-time high.
But like, that's a moment where I said, no. I know this Taylor Swift. I mean, I feel like we're always going to be talking about Taylor in relationship to Drake or whatever, but like, you think of like the recent Drake album, the moments that to me that really stood out are the moments that really felt like 09, 2010, 2011.
The grounded stuff.
Yeah, wounded, detailed, solipsistic, etc. That Taylor has a version of that too. And seeing the camera like hold still on her, relatively speaking, after all the kind of frenetic stuff earlier, was a relief to me. And not like I need to only see the version of Taylor that I prefer, but I did find it even like cinematically, it served her better and it felt better to watch.
Yeah. And that's why, like, I fight against my own impulse, which is like old Taylor is the Taylor to watch. But like the Fearless section, I thought incredible.
Flawless.
Yeah. Like,
genuinely,
just
could have watched 90 minutes just of Fearless.
I mean, this part I think is where Eras works, is you can really feel where the pivot moments are in her career and in the songs. And like you say, like the move from the specificity of some of the earlier work to the, you know, like the 1989 part, like I get it. It felt climactic. It felt exciting.
Yeah.
But it also felt like these songs sacrifice something. And I thought the fact that the more intimate music worked on such a grand scale almost undermined the need for Midnights, which I think like you and I have both thought about as an album written in part because the two albums she made during the pandemic wouldn't play in a football stadium.
And frankly, I think that was borne out, to be fair.
I disagree. Like, I thought apart those from ones Betty, worked. I mean, I thought August worked. Like, I thought My Tears Ricochet worked.
Okay, Betty, The Last Great American Dynasty, to me, good, well-paired, back-to-back. Thought that was It has a rhythmic vitality that I think you need in this kind of setting.
Right. There's a beat.
Yes. But like
the one? No? On the roof?
All
the songs killed it.
It's fine. I found myself more sympathetic to Folklore leaving this film than I historically.
Okay, that's what I was looking for. Not what you said at the beginning of the episode.
No, Evermore. To me, Evermore is.
What songs did she play from Evermore? She did Willow.
Willow, Marjorie, Champagne Problems, Tolerated.
I agree. Look,
Champagne
I agree.
Problems, I thought was okay.
Those were not my choices from that album.
And this is the thing. Following Fearless album and In Front of Reputation. I mean, this to me is an implicit admission of defeat.
That's a bathroom break.
This is just letting people know, like, I know we got to do this. It's like,
but then why four Evermore songs and one Speak Now song? Why?
Come tell us. We want to know.
That's where I'm talking about recency bias. So it's just like,
of course,
Evermore songs have never been toured. But to me, you could have done, and I think this was one that was cut from the film, like could have done Tis the Damn Season, which at least has some drive to it, you know?
I guess the thing that I was surprised by was seeing those songs live is like, look, I know they're duds, like respectfully, like they're duds, but like they're not duds to 55,000 to 75,000 people. And so that's helpful for me to see. I'm glad to watch it. I'm glad to know that people are connecting with those songs. I don't connect with them, but obviously people connect with them. So if she wants to play five of them and seven Midnight songs, they're in the same way last week. If you're 18 or 20, your Drake is Drake. And if you're 25, you're Drake. It's like same thing with Taylor. Totally same thing.
Okay. So the visual palette of this film. Okay. I've long had a joke, a bit, that it's like, if Taylor had good visual aesthetics, she'd be too powerful. Like, it's actually like, thank God that she's never made like an amazing music video or put on or a great album cover.
I don't know if you saw like going around on Twitter recently in like a couple different contexts, like the Taylor dance moves in the Delicate video, which just like the kind of like real like angular and awkward and unbalanced. I don't know. I think obviously because people are now seeing her on a big screen and then kind of like harking back to classic awkward Taylor dancing.
Yeah. I'm not talking so much about the awkward dancing as I am about the rainbows and the dresses and the cabin and the, you know, just like this stuff.
Broadway.
Yeah. It's very Broadway. Yeah. And that's something that I'm quite allergic to. Mm-hmm.
I dislike no bigger star has worse merch.
The song is literally called Gold Rush, and you chose disgusting, muddy, dusty, dirty, frankly, hideous colors.
This podcast is supported by Washington.org. Washington, D.C. offers visitors so much to explore. Just ask Dio, who shared her experiences from a recent visit.
What was your favorite food all weekend?
The Ethiopian food at Sihei.
And the first place you would visit again?
The bookstore, Little District Books.
What did you appreciate the most?
Really just like the genuine kindness of everyone that I encountered this weekend.
Why should people visit D.C.?
Well, D.C. is a place with such a thriving culture.
Washington, D.C. has something for everybody. Plan your next trip at Washington.org.
I'm Judson Jones. I'm a reporter and meteorologist at the New York Times. There's a tendency in weather reporting to have these sensational headlines to drive clicks because a lot of places have to rely on clicks for revenue. At The Times, because we're subscriber funded, we don't always have to use crazy terms like bomb cyclone or monster hurricane when we're covering extreme weather. We're not chasing clicks. We can just tell you the facts of what a storm could actually do. Because trust is a crucial part of good journalism. If you want to support this kind of work and subscribe to the New York Times, go to nytimes.com/subscribe. I don't have to say ginormous hail.
And this is all part of what I'm saying, which is like if Taylor had a sharper visual eye or taste, For a while, I thought, she'd be too powerful. She'd be the most dominant artist of all time.
I think I know where you're going. Yeah.
And now it has been suggested to me and I've come to on my own. It's like, no, in fact, this,
yes,
the corniness
That's
of this look
That's what makes it big.
Is what makes it big. And most people don't agree with me. And no, I'm in the minority, yeah, not the majority.
No, that's absolutely right. Because if she was an aesthete, she would be inaccessible.
Yes.
So she's not an aesthete, so she's she's accessible.
But the look of this stuff, I'm just like, and I've seen Taylor tours before. I've seen the Singing in the Rain bits.
Yeah, of course.
You know, I've seen the Tolerated one is a great example, which, like, there's a lot of jokes online, like, oh, this is cinema, when she sits down at the long table and then the backup dancer comes and they make faces at each other. it's like, and I thought that it would be harder.
I wish one of the water glasses was empty so I could
just fling it. Yeah. I thought it would be harder for me to sit through because I find it so cringe, just the look of all this stuff. But I'm just like, I was in it. I was just like, it did not take away from my enjoyment of the music, which I guess is how I feel about her whole career. It's just like, no matter how bad it looks, like, I think of some of the old music videos, you know, like White Horse. When she's doing White Horse and she's really, like, just, like, the most melodrama. Like, mm-hmm. I think back on all these, you know, Wildest Dreams even. Like, and I'm just like, man, like, do you remember when she shot a video in Africa for Wildest Dreams? In hindsight, tangled up with you all night, burning it down. Someday when you leave me, I bet these memories hold you around. Like... just like, what are we doing here? And yet, like, I'm just like that's my cousin, you know what I mean? Like, like, you can't hold that against them. Like, it's like, it's, it feels like,
I can't wait till like the Pop Crave tweet of like, today is the 13th anniversary of Taylor Swift going to Africa to film the Wildest Dreams video. Like,
but what did you make of letting this all wash over you at like such a scale? Because like, also like, she, like, her physicality on screen was great. Like,
yeah, that's why that's why I felt so kind of like offended by the editing and directorial choices here. Because like, I've been following Taylor, writing about Taylor, thinking about Taylor for 15 years at this point. Like, and I feel like the person who made these choices, or the people who made these choices, were like actively working against her. I felt like it was like at war. The film was at war with Taylor.
And you feel that in like the costuming and the choreography as well?
No.
Just the direction.
Just the direction and editing. Look, costuming and choreography, look, I've long since accepted that I do not enjoy those aspects of the performance, but I'm not offended by them anymore. I don't, as they say, I don't rate them at all. Like, I think that they are clunky. I think that they are. This
great
is actually
good. Honestly, great cop.
This is good.
Yeah.
This is
good. As good as it gets.
One thing I will say is that the other thing that I was really struck by, and actually I found probably as distracting as maybe you find the sets or the outfits, the smiles. The smiles.
Hers?
No, the band. Yeah. The backup singers, right. The dancers, relentless, yeah. Relentless smiling,
yeah.
Unbearable smiling. Like, and I understand, it's like you're communicating.
Sure. You're playing to the cheap seats.
Yeah. And also it's like you're playing to the cheap seats and you're playing to the cameras.
Yeah.
But not all of these songs are smile songs, obviously. And look, I'm not going to say that there aren't moments where the happy song lines up with the smiling backup dancer. But I felt like there were so many moments where I kind of caught someone being like, and I was like, this isn't exactly right for the tone of what's happening musically. And it made me think about what is the Taylor live value proposition? Like, what are people going there for? And I feel like they're going there for, even if the songs are sad, even if you're connecting to a heartbreak song, even if you're connecting to one of the downer tracks in the catalog, you're there to connect with it in a communion way.
Yes.
And that communion with the other tens of thousands of people, with Taylor herself, that is a source of relief, of succor, That's, you know what I mean? Like, that's where that smile makes sense. I found it a little distracting. There were a number of moments where I was like in my feels about a certain song or at a certain lyrical moment. And then you catch someone on screen being like, I was like, but by and large, I think most fans, even at the darkest moments, are showing up because they think that they can achieve or be brought to that place through the dark songs.
What moment brought you to that place?
To the smile place or to the dark place?
Either. When were you feeling the most? In a surprising way or in a way that you were leading up to, anticipating?
Okay. I'm looking at the set list right now. You Belong With Me is astonishing, remains astonishing. I thought the performance of it was so, so pure. And you really hear, like, even a mature, older Taylor still sounds great delivering that. You Belong With Me, I thought was incredible. Look What You Made Me Do.
Wow.
I just was like, let's go.
Can I tell you the truth? Yeah. I went to the bathroom.
Unbelievable.
I saw like
whole Reputation.
I saw like half of Look What You Made Me Do.
Wow.
I'm like, I still don't like this song.
Terrible choice. Like, Enchanted comes right after that and it makes it clear how bad Enchanted remains.
I prefer it.
Unbelievable.
And I also prefer Ready For It. I thought Ready For It was
incredible. Ready For It was also great. Yeah. Even the most attitudinal Taylor songs are rarely actually attitudinal.
Yes.
And Look What You Made Me Do is like a genuinely, truly attitudinal Taylor song. And I thought that she leaned into it. I was really, really grateful for that. Blank Space. Blank Space was really good.
With the fake bashing of the car.
And an interesting like, thing.
Why is she holding a golf club on top of this giant lit up cube?
From Wimby was where I was sitting / standing during the show when I was there. I saw that whole thing, but I didn't quite register that every time they hit the car, there was dented, a dent in.
Yeah.
I didn't, maybe I just didn't have the right angle.
As a
on
throwback
it.
To the music video.
Yeah, but I just like, it didn't realize that that's what was
one
happening
of her better
on the
music
screen.
Videos, good, as we've been slandering her music videos.
Definitely a good music video, but I was like happy to see that additional detail in the film. To me, those were probably the highlights. What about you?
I've gone through most of my highlights.
Yeah, I think went to the bathroom during absolute madness.
I don't have that much use for the late period singles until Antihero, really. The moment that you had with You Belong With Me, I think I had during Love Story, which is just like, I'm always trying to find a way to make that not the defining Taylor Swift song in my head. And then you get some distance from it and you see it sort of like in a broader context. And I'm like, man, it's just really hard to argue against this. As like, I feel like that song will be like, we think of Frank Sinatra songs, like, you know, nearing a century later.
Yeah, of course.
Like, I think that one's just
when we're doing Popcast Deluxe in 2120.
Yeah, it's like, it's just going to last forever, whether you like it or not. Mm-hmm. And that really set in while watching it.
Yeah. By and large, before we go to the next segment, would you recommend this to a person who has not seen the Taylor tour?
I would. I think that, you know, in my day-to-day life, I still get a lot of, so what's the deal with Taylor Swift questions?
Like, every day.
Every day.
Literally every
day. And it's come back around, like, it's one anecdotal way to register the level of fame that she has at this moment is like, you know, an old person might ask me, a child might ask me, a 20-something might ask.
You're out here speaking to old people and children?
Every now and then.
Wow.
I try to keep my my
conversational range wide.
Yeah. Okay.
Do you think they're all watching? Old people and children?
Please. And I do think, like, for even the most skeptical among us, I think this movie would draw people in. I do think it's a little long for a non-fan, but I think even if you know, I don't know if people still do this, but like if you're seeing another movie and you're a little early and you just want to pop in for 15 minutes of the Eras Tour film, I recommend it because I do think it answers a lot of questions just to see the sheer scale of it and also just to hear some of these songs where you're just like, oh man, like these are undeniable.
I guess if there is a canonical Taylor cinematic experience, it is probably like the Folklore Sessions.
Long Pond.
Yeah. Like, to me, and about an album I don't even like that much, but yeah. I think is a frankly much more on the nose and revealing piece of work about this particular person. I'm also really curious, you know, Beyonce is doing a Renaissance tour film.
Yep.
At any point, they could close their eyes and be right back there and take it with them.
Beyonce was gracious enough to show up at the opening night.
I was Googling, like, is this AI? is this Photoshop? Is this AI? It appears that Beyonce was there, along with our Podcast Deluxe guest, Maren Morris.
Oh, yeah, Maren Morris.
Live at the Grove with Beyonce and Taylor.
And so it makes me wonder, what can Beyonce do with a similar format in a relatively similar period of time? If anything, I would venture to guess it's going to be a lot more of a mercenary edit, like a lot more military precise.
I mean, and the other thing that Beyonce does is whisper hushed poetry over backstage and family footage, which we didn't have at all in the Taylor.
No. But like, I think even if Beyonce keeps it purely stage, I have a feeling it's going to be a better cinematic experience. That's my guess.
All right.
But we'll revisit it.
We'll be back.
Because that's going to be a show that I didn't see that I'll be curious. You know, I did not get to see Renaissance Tour, unfortunately.
So. Couple weeks, we'll be back.
Yeah.
The other major musical event of the weekend?
New Bad Bunny album, Nadie Sabe, surprise released on Friday. Quote unquote, those who know, know.
Do you want me to test out my Spanish and do the whole title?
Go for it.
Nadie sabe lo que va a pasar mañana.
What?
Not bad.
You did it.
Yeah. No one knows what's going to happen tomorrow.
That's true. This album was surprise, you know, maybe 5 days before.
One of these surprises that gets hinted at over and over again for 2 months.
Obviously, like, we also knew, like, obviously, not like we're some genius.
No, I think Bad Bunny fans knew.
Yeah, people knew. So this is, and it's interesting that this album comes exactly on the heels of the Drake album, because I think
it couldn't be more similar.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, like, these are two stars. I wouldn't say at exactly the same stages of their careers, but who are trying to solve a similar problem and are ultimately finding similar solutions to that problem. This is a long album. Whew. This is an album that returns to an early style of Bad Bunny lyrical approach and production selection. It's much more sort of like trap and like hip-hop-y than a lot of the later stuff. I found myself, the more I listened to it, increasingly sympathetic to the songs, decreasingly sympathetic to the kind of the approach. It's fatiguing, and I just felt like one of the things that Bad Bunny has historically been so good at is trying new genres, trying new styles, trying new flows. I mean, again, this is a Drake thing of like, hey, I wonder what it would be like if I did an emo record. I wonder if a pop punk record. I wonder what it would be like if I did like a straight hip hop record. I wonder if I work with Natanael Cano and do like a sort of Corridos Tumbados record. Like, this is the thing that Bad Bunny is like one of the best at.
Yeah.
This feels like a little bit of a retreat and saying, what's like the most comfortable, fastest return to form that I can do? Should we listen to, I mean, don't want to do the first song because it's very long.
It's very long, but it's like it's setting the tone. It's a State of the Union address. It's a Drake song.
Yes.
Yeah.
But should we listen to Monaco?
Yeah. I want to talk about Monaco. So let's listen to a little bit of Monaco.
Yes.
Watch some of the video.
Yes.
Dime, esto es lo que tú querías. Yo soy fino, esto es trap de galería. Tú eres un charro, Rocky de aquí, una porquería. Yo un campeón, Rocky Marciano, Rocky Balboa, Rocky Balbía. Tengo la ruta, tengo la vía, sí, tengo la vía. Los gastos de noche facturo todo el día.
What do you got?
I think everything about this Bad Bunny album is contained within the video specifically.
I have not watched the video.
Okay.
So talk me through it.
He shows up at Carbone.
Okay. Well, thanks for watching.
And Al Pacino is there.
Great.
And then randomly he's posing with the Red Bull F1 car.
Okay. In Monaco.
Of course.
And it's just basically, to me, it's like, okay, you're Bad Bunny in 2023. You're supposed to be taking the year off. But suddenly everything in the universe is available to you, from Jersey Club beats to Kendall Jenner and Al Pacino and spicy rigatoni. And you're just like, I'll have all of it, yeah, you know? Sure. And it's a victory lap. It's a good song. I like this song. It's going to be a smash.
Yeah, it's one of the better songs.
I have no doubt. Great orchestral sample, some fun rapping. But just like, yeah, like, let me just put Al Pacino in a semi-meaningless video, and I'll also pose on the best F1 car of all time. Like, right. Just like,
because why not? Yeah.
And that's how this whole album feels to me.
Although lyrically, and our colleague JP pointed this out, lyrically, a lot of this album is like, oh, fame.
I mean, the Bad Bunny's lyrics do not get dissected on the level of Drake,
right?
Part because
of the language,
yes. Language barrier. Mm-hmm. Obviously, a lot of people write and think about Bad Bunny who speaks Spanish, mm-hmm. but in the English language press and on social media, it's not dissected the same way. Mm-hmm. But like, he's pissy.
Yeah, you run. You know, if you're curious, run it through Google Translate.
Yeah, I mean the English translation is great. He also, I don't know if you caught this. He has a line where he's like, "I could be bi."
Oh, I didn't guess that.
Basically the same
Drake line.
Yeah, like, it's not exactly the same joke, but like, it's almost there. So yeah, I think Bad Bunny is going through it. He does not love fame,
which is something that, you know, literally there's a song called Gracias Por Nada. Like, literally, like he's just letting you know. I will say, like, the back half of the record, much like the Drake album, the back half of the record, when some of the genre experimentation kind of kicks in, I was like, oh, like, and this is like Where She Goes, which is a single, which was a single from maybe like a month ago or a month and a half ago.
Jersey Club one.
Jersey Club record. We should listen to a little bit of that. And then there's Thunder and Lightning, which is with Eladio Carrion, who's a Puerto Rican rapper. And the back half of that is a drill record.
This year, a very important public figure turns 80. He sent us his wish for his birthday.
My wish is for everyone to practice wildfire safety, because only you can prevent wildfires.
That sounds easy enough. Bet you don't know who it is. Nah, of course you do. It's Smokey Bear. Let's all make sure Smokey's wish comes true by learning his wildfire prevention tips at SmokeyBear.com. Because Smokey Bear lives within us all. Brought to you by the USDA Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Little sprinkles of drill throughout this album.
Yeah. And so I was listening to that song and I was like, huh, okay. Well, you still want a piece. You clearly want a piece of that.
Yeah.
And I wonder if this album, even this subject matter, might have been more fascinating if it wasn't kind of like essentially, frankly, it's a Spotify core album.
Yeah.
Not to invoke Popcast circa 2018, but this is a Spotify core album.
Or it's a mixtape.
Yes, but it's a mixtape in the
a Spotify era.
Yes, it's a mixtape in a Spotify era, and it has that, like, the way that his vocals are produced, combined with the specific. It's like these are like hip hop or hip hop adjacent beats, but they're not. They're
woozy.
Yeah, they're like that, and so the way that much of this album, especially the first 10 songs, kind of like together. This could be a Post Malone record on some level. And so, you know, is it as good as the previous Bad Bunny breakout albums? Like, I don't think it's as good. Even if I like the songs, it doesn't tell me a lot about him. It tells me here's a person who is I don't want to say stagnating, but here's a person who has maybe run out of runway on all the things that he's done so far and is taking some kind of spiritual breather to say, hey, lyrically, hey, I'm kind of over this, or I need a path out. And the way that I'm expressing that in words is by saying it, and in production choices by going back to a very, very, very old comfort zone.
This is a little bit worrying to me in general, which is that we only have so many superstars, and it feels like you can reach that level fairly quickly now. Bad Bunny is among the last to do it. You know, I would put Olivia Rodrigo in that camp. On the hip hop side, I think of people like 21 Savage and Lil Baby, who are smaller artists, but command that sort of level of oxygen within their sphere. And I do wonder what we do with these people when they peak. I feel like they often, we love when they're working their way up and they're fighting against something and they're pushing back and they're on the vanguard.
You're saying that all that, you're like the entire, are you suggesting the entire framework of contemporary stardom is the rise?
Yes.
And that then, there's not anything after that.
And I think you see it from the artists and their frustration and their inability to push past once they reach the summit. And I think you see it in the fatigue from fans. And yet, I feel like, you know, Bad Bunny said he was going to take this year off. He couldn't quite do it because you always, and you see the same thing in Drake. You see it in Taylor's omnipresence.
Yeah, and things move fast.
They can't quite ever leave the game enough. And they're always like, but don't forget about me. But don't forget about me. And yet the thing that they're delivering in order to be remembered is not at that level. And just it's just content fatigue.
Yeah, I mean,
and it's
again,
spanning all of music, and especially at the superstar level.
I don't remember if this was in an interview you did, but it was with either Coach K or P from QC talking about their release strategy. Whoever it was expressed is that it's not like you're releasing songs and hoping that you get on a radio playlist. It's that every week there's a new Spotify new music playlist, Apple new music playlist, there's a new hip hop playlist, there's a new R&B playlist. There are now untold holes to fill, and it is their job to release enough music to fill those holes. Yeah. And I imagine if you are Bad Bunny and you know every time you put something out, you're going to have a platform, you're going to be amplified by these platforms, and then you go a week, a month, 3 months, 6 months without, and you see, you know what? Those platforms, they continue. Those platforms don't love me. I'm useful for them. There's going to be a Spotify New Music Friday, whether or not I put out new music on Friday. There's going to be a Spotify hip hop playlist, whether or not I do it. There's going to be, and there's got to be some tug in the back. I would think that's like, should I let someone else cook?
Yeah.
And how there are
long
plenty
can
of,
I wait?
And also, like, with, you know, the way that Spanish language music is moving in America right now, whether it's, you know, Peso Pluma or Bizarre Rap collaborations, like, it's not, the pipeline is much wider now. And I think it's creating opportunities for all kinds of music to be heard that weren't really being heard, certainly not 5 to 10 years ago, but even like 2 to 3 years ago. And Bad Bunny is to thank, I think, for a lot of that. Bad Bunny is to thank. Does that mean that he wants to grandfather out and just like walk away? Or is he still like, nah, I still got some game in me? I don't know. He's also hosting SNL. To be able to host SNL at this point is an incredible, like, step and achievement.
Yeah, and he's diversified so much so quickly. You know, he's in movies, he's doing the wrestling thing, he's dating a Jenner. And sometimes it feels like an artist at that level is checking the box when it comes to putting out music. At the same time, it's like, similarly to the Drake album, it's like, out of 20-odd Bad Bunny songs, there's going to be a lot of pretty good songs. And I'm grateful for them as a fan. But narratively, I think there's a struggle.
All right. Before we go to the question of the week, do you find it odd that he's sampling Madonna's Vogue on this album?
Look, I mean, this is where we're at.
It's like, literally, this is like the too big to fail era, where it's just like, what's the biggest hit? And it's not simply like, what's a big hit in like the Jack Harlow Fergie sense. Like, what's like audacious, but not philosophically sound. Is there a word for that?
It's like I said about the Monaco video. It's pure flex. Because I can.
Pure flex. You want to go out on a maybe more appealing song?
Yeah, I mean, the other thing that he's doing, which our stars do when they reach a certain level, is they collaborate widely and they bring up young talent.
Putting people on.
So, you know, you have the Grupo Frontero record from earlier this year that he did. And then on this, he has some Latin trap artists that he's bringing. I thought the verse from Young Miko, who I hadn't really heard before, I think maybe in passing on a playlist or something, on what I believe is like the third track called Pina. I thought it was a strong verse and a really nice showcase up early on a blockbuster album for an artist on the rise. Miko, ay, Miko, ay. Miko, brr, baby Miko. Tu mirada es profunda y la mía es penetrante. Yo siento que te conozco de antes. Me dijo que nunca había estado con un cantante. Nah, no te creo. Que se joda, mami, voy pa' dentro, fue culpelo. Hey.
Speaking of artists on the rise, I have a question.
From a reader.
A reader. Well, I mean, yes. I mean, I've got questions.
Sorry. From a viewer.
A viewer.
From a listener and a viewer, please.
Do you see what we... We're on camera.
Yeah, yeah. Watch Popcast Deluxe on YouTube.
You do realize we're on camera, right? Yeah. It's a viewer.
Sometimes. I like to forget. I like to zone out like I'm Adonis in the booth.
That's correct. So the subject, this is from 2 weeks ago, just for clarity.
So a lot has happened.
A lot has happened in the Adonis Graham universe in the last couple of weeks. But this is perhaps prescient in anticipating this. This is from Sasha. Sasha says, Drake's new video intro features Adonis speaking about his painting he did that Drake used for his album cover.
Talk about how much money you got for your beautiful drawing.
Oh, please.
Is this a brilliant move to bake in some art usage fees that could begin to feed a retirement account for young Adonis? I should say I'm pretty sure Adonis
probably already good.
Already has a retirement account. I don't think he needs like the royalties off of this artwork. But that's fine. But I appreciate the spirit. Sasha says, I am a current art education grad student at Brooklyn College. We salute that. And we recently learned about the stage of drawing that Adonis shows. Impressively, Drake speaking to his son is a textbook example of how a parent should be engaging with their child about art. Be inquisitive more than complimentary. The rub is when he asks if he wants to talk about how much he got paid for the art. In Jennifer Egan's, this is
incredible. This question, incredible.
There's so many pivots to this question. In Jennifer Egan's pair of novels, A Visit from the Goon Squad / The Candy House. First of all, Jennifer Egan, come on Popcast Deluxe. She weaves a tale of a near future music industry based around children responding to and engaging with music on iPads as the driving factor in the music business. That's just reality. That's actually not futuristic. That's just real.
Goon Squad came out a while ago.
That's fine. Did Drake begin a trend of bringing his child's art into the product? Is this any different than Blue Ivy, who is phenomenal at dancing, which could likely lead to a career in the performing arts? And how much for the Adonis original Goat Daddy at Christie's if Drake decides to auction it?
This was big news to me that this was a goat and not a dog.
I still think it's a dog.
you think death of the artist?
Yeah, absolutely.
The author. Like, Adonis doesn't get to decide.
No, this is a dog. This is a dog. I regret to inform everybody.
So since this question.
We're back to that, like demonic goat last week. Okay, it was a lot there. This thing brought up a lot of energy.
It's in the air. Adonis was featured on the album. Mm-hmm. Gets a little bit of a verse. And then Drake, as we heard across this album, shortening verses from Chief Keef and seemingly Sexy Red, also shortened the verse from his own song.
Child.
But has since released it as the Adonis freestyle.
My Man freestyle.
The My Man freestyle.
Yeah.
Don't talk to my man like that. I like it when you like it. My man.
Okay.
Big week.
Celebrity children. Yeah. So let's talk about Blue Ivy. There was also a clip of, I believe, Madonna's daughter voguing on stage. Yep,
two of Madonna's kids, at least, I think, showed up at the debut of her tour in London.
And were voguing on stage. I think if I had to guess, the kind of the way that stardom functions now, like, you know, it's kind of quaint to think about 4 years ago, story of Adidon, like Drake hiding, or 3 years ago, whatever, is like Drake hiding his child.
Yep.
How unviable that is in like the contemporary star making ecosystem. Like, you think about what happened with Sexy Red, like just in the last like week or right. something, just everything is up for dissection. Everything is available. Everything is put out. So the idea that anybody has secrets anymore feels like gone. And what I think that also has meant is this kind of collapsing of traditional boundaries between like things I'm doing for myself or my family or my personal life and things I'm doing for my professional life. And I think increasingly someone like Beyonce, like Blue Ivy, is like a part of the Beyonce narrative.
And the tour.
Yes.
Literally.
Well, literally, yes. But I'm saying what's happening on tour yes. is like the manifestation. Yeah. It's like the final form of something that's been happening for years at this point. You can say this even abstractly about Kanye and Kanye.
I was going to say, this is all the Kardashian.
This is Kim and North. Yes. Culture. Yes. It's the Kim and North TikTok, which is implicitly Kanye content, even though it's not Kanye's not involved in it. Yes, I'm blind. Did it surprise you that Drake has found a way to make content out of Adonis?
I mean, he's a really cute kid.
Sure, very cute.
And they've been making basketball content for years, so it That's only makes sense that the music content would fall.
Is there anything that feels visual? Is there anything that feels icky to you about it?
I can't, like, we're too far down the road. You know what I mean? Yeah. Not with Drake specifically, but with Nepo babies. And like, they now we're talking literal babies. And I just think this is, yeah, we want 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week reality television from all of our most famous performers.
And also, if it's being reinforced to you that the thing that people are connecting with you on is access to your personal self, even someone like Drake, who's always done an incredible job of finding ways to creatively distill things that happen in real life and make art from them that is separate from the real life. Like, Drake is not tabloid messy in the classic way that I think of like 2000s era tabloid messy stars. He's not, or if he is, it's not as publicly visible. Maybe it's living more in like stan accounts and comments and yeah. stuff.
And it's blowing up the lives of private citizens. Yes, usually literally. Like when people find out who the girl is that he's rapping about.
Like, yeah, with like 8,000 followers on Instagram or whatever. Yeah. But Drake has historically not done it that way.
Yeah.
But obviously understands the demand for content and subject matter of that nature is very high. And so because of that, why wouldn't he take his son and put it into play?
Adonis's mother, also a great artist. Let's get her paintings moving.
Yeah, should we throw a Sophie Brousseau up?
Some Sophie Brousseau.
Yeah, throw a Sophie Brousseau up. Like, yeah. Absolutely. Song of the week?
What do you got?
Okay, I want to talk about, we were talking about Bad Bunny. We're talking about Peso Pluma. We're talking about Spanish language music. We haven't talked about Ivan Cornejo.
Okay.
Ivan Cornejo, young, maybe he's like 19, maybe he's 20 now, is one of the better pure singers that are kind of moving in this space now. Had a number of really good songs, a couple interesting albums. There's a new single. I'm not sure it's better than any of the other ones. It's just the one that kind of hit me recently. So what I like about Ivan Cornejo, the songwriting is a lot of heartbreak. It has some of the naivete of like classic wistful teen pop, but it's framed in a completely different musical idiom. And so it's this tension between the classicism and the musical idiom with like the raw, like sweetness almost of the sadness of like a young person's sadness. And this song I thought really achieved the intersection of those things really well. What do you got this week?
You went all depth and heart and soul, and I'm listening to Ken Carson.
Talk about like
that. Yeah.
Okay.
I think the less said about this, the better. This is
post words.
Yeah, this is post
critique.
Post. This is from Playboi Carti's Opium label. Ken Carson has a new album out.
Yeah.
This song's called Jennifer's Body.
Yeah, it's the one. Drake posted it.
Oh, he did.
He posted it on his IG story.
I mean, a long tale of Drake throughout culture and this episode.
And it's interesting because I find Ken Carson to be kind of anti-Drake in a way. But like, okay. Yeah, but like, I'm interested. Yeah.
I think this is based on the film Jennifer's Body, not the whole song Jennifer's Body. Though I recommend both.
Both. Yeah, sure. But probably the film. Yeah.
I mean, and based on the lyrical content.
Or just not connected to either, just a series of words that he found on the internet and decided to use.
Sounds good, though. Let's listen to it. Keep it a thing. I got that on my wind. Am I set the light bulb? Do I have to the sink? Ain't talking to the rent. You saying I'm sad, babe. Girl, I don't do no sticks. You know I can't buy.
It would be great if after we came back from playing the snippet of that video, like the entire set was hit, like as if a tornado had like come through it.
Rage music hit Popcast Deluxe.
Truly. Yeah. Maybe we'll figure out a way to like AI that. Snack. Let's get involved. Coming out of the Taylor Swift Eras Tour bucket.
Coming out of the bucket.
But it's not popcorn.
You want to talk about these?
I do. It was my birthday recently.
Happy birthday, John.
Thank you. I had a party. And Charlie Franco from Throwing Fits, came through, blessed me with these, said they're one of his favorite snacks. They are from, I believe, Marks and Spencer. They're British. What are they called?
These are Percy Pig gummies, as it says on the back. No artificial colors or flavors.
There's no color. Yeah, no color.
It's artificial. British spelling.
Yes. Look, that's a high recommendation coming from Charlie. I feel like he's game.
Beautiful.
Are they?
They're really cute.
I really kind of like really blocked cute. It out. Like I wanted to approach them fresh.
Yeah. Can we get a close up on this cute little piggy?
You think these are sour? Like wait. Mm-hmm.
Maybe for you. Delicious. It's the same flavor and consistency of like a gummy hamburger.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Is the ear different?
Is it juicier? There's like the, you know, gummy, mm-hmm. like a, mm-hmm. a gummy turtle, you know, a Haribo turtle. Yeah. It has the half side that's like more marshmallowy. Mm-hmm. And then the regular gummy is a little bit more tart, usually.
I prefer the regular gummy on this.
But I like the
combo. Overall, it's good.
I like the combo a lot. It really reminds me of IKEA low-key has great gummies.
Mm-hmm. That's actually a great comparison point.
Common flavor.
I wish it was a little more flavorful. It could be a little brighter. I do like the texture. It's not kind of like a violent chew on the mouth.
It's soft.
It really like...
No jaw pain.
No, not at all. Like, you're leaning into it. It feels coherent as like a chewing experience.
I would destroy a bag of these in under 45 seconds, 9 out of 10.
I'm going to go 7. I feel like spiritually, like a lot of those gummies that you're talking about, I struggle with because either the texture is too intense, like it's too like mortar and pestle, like we're just like going in, or the flavor is so tart that I actually kind of like recoil from it. I think this is right. Texturally, I don't want it to be more tart. I just want the flavor to be louder.
Maybe you want variety, like because these are all one flavor.
That's true.
If you had three different color picks.
That's true. If there are, I don't know what the full product line is.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to go 7 on this. Before we go, I only want to ask one question. I just want to leave it to the people to answer the question. Why is Woe Vicky in Bay Ridge?
Deep.
Bless them. Yeah, we'll bless y'all. No this way. For y'all to split, all right? Back up. One of y'all bust that. Oh, that was aggressive.
That's our show. Every podcast ever is at nytimes.com/podcast. Every episode of Popcast Deluxe, which is me and Joe, which Joe just learned is on YouTube. We are filming this, if you can believe it. tinyurl.com/podcastdeluxe. Email us, popcastnytimes.com, with any questions. We will get them in our question segment. Subscribe to Popcast anywhere you get your audio and or audio video content. That's Spotify, Apple, YouTube, etc. Get in the Discord, get in the Facebook group, tinyurl.com/podcast Discord. I'm trying to get more in the Discord. tinyurl.com/podcast Facebook. I apologize for being derelict. I'm trying to get more involved. Our senior producer is Sawyer Roque. Our editor is Jamie Heffitz. And of course, finally, huge thanks to Pedro Rosado, Karen Gans, Nel Galogli, Leslie Davis, Pat Gunther. Big assist this week from Abe Sader with the sound. Big assist. Really appreciate it. And we'll be back next week.
Meet Janice. Unfortunately, her thing is sneeze attacks every time spring returns.
I literally sneezed 40 times in a row once.
Luckily for Janice, at the Walmart Pharmacy, she can get over-the-counter allergy relief for things like sneezing, runny nose, and watery eyes fast with online pickup or delivery.
No more suffering? That's nothing to sneeze at.
I see what you did there. Help survive allergy season with fast online pickup or delivery from Walmart. Welcome to an easier pharmacy. Welcome to your Walmart.